keep it up, Yankee Doodle Dandy. Find the music and the step and with the girls be handy.
Like father's gun.
Only a nation louder. Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle, dandy. Find the music and the step and with the girls be happy.
So that song was written by the British to mock the Americans.
Oh.
But then the Americans were like, no, fuck you. Now it's our patriotic song.
Yeah.
And that song was what the British forces at Fort York heard blasting through the woods as the Americans in 1812 descended upon the city of York and massacred, pillaged literally everybody and everything.
Okay.
So, that's a good note to start the podcast on.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. This is Dead Men Don't Podcast.
Welcome to Dead Men Don't Podcast.
With your beautiful host, Adara, and...
I look a little bit like a grandmother today.
No, you don't. You look great.
I even have a cat on my lap. Currently licking all of the hand lotion off of my hand. Do you see her paw?
Yes.
Hurt.
She, like, won't let go.
God. That hurts. One of these days we'll do a video recording session and you guys will actually be able to see my cat being a little shit.
So anyway, we went to Fort York National Historic Site about over a week ago.
Yep.
And we had the pleasure of touring around with Ewan Wardell, who works there.
Who was great.
Yeah.
He had so many amazing stories to tell.
And
very tall.
Yeah. And yes, he was very tall. And he had a lot of stories of his own, actually. Like,
tall,
surprising
tall
ones.
Hey guys, before I show you this audio, I just want to let you know that there is some weird static interference in the first building we went in during our tour. Not really sure what it is, but if you hear some cracking noises, I do apologize. I listened to all the other buildings we went into and it didn't happen in any of the other ones. So, not really sure. But anyway, back to the story.
You and nice to meet you.
Adara.
Nice to meet you. So, would you like to go up to the site to conduct the interview? So
yeah, great.
This building had its soft opening in the fall of 2014.
Oh, okay.
So it's a fairly recent addition to the neighborhood. I'll cut outside and see your sales. Sometimes they don't close properly behind it.
Big heavy doors.
Yeah.
So the museum's only 4 years old?
This building is only four years old?
Yeah.
Okay. Fort York opened as a museum in 1934.
Okay.
It's actually part of commemorating the centennial of the city of Toronto.
Right,
so. And then also part of the motivation was it was the Great Depression, so it got people to work.
Yes, of course.
How big is it?
Well, and you take into account the entirety of the Heritage District, you're looking at over 2.5 hectares of land. So you got the fort proper, this Paul Keel, and this would also, this Heritage District extends down to Fleet Street, where the armory is today.
Yeah.
And then you have Victoria. No, this is the one down here. So we are here.
Yeah.
And then up at Portland and Wellington Street is Victoria Memorial Square,
okay,
which is the first military cemetery and the oldest European burial ground in Toronto.
Wow.
So that's also part of our Heritage District. So while we're here, I'll just use this really quickly. For the tours we were doing last week, we were having guests gather on the visitor center, and then we were kind of running it mostly as one group. We take people into the fort first, and then from the fort we go to Strawn Avenue, burying ground, and then up along Niagara, or Wellington, should I say Niagara, and then to Victoria Square.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it hit up both the old cemeteries.
Yeah.
Well, it's somewhat quiet this time of year, mostly school groups on weekdays, and then we get our fair share of casual visitors on nice days, but as you can imagine, this time of year, all it takes is lousy weather. And
Today is gorgeous, though. Might get some casual visitors today.
Oh, yeah. So unlike most historic sites, if you've done a lot of visits to old homes and stuff like that. Fort York actually doesn't have, if you will, sort of an organic story that's been told for time immemorial.
Right.
The stories that are associated with this site are mostly just odd occurrences that happen to the staff,
yes.
but don't quite elevate to the level of true ghost story.
Right. That's so, what we like.
Yeah. And that's what I thought I'd regale you with today.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Because we do have stories that are associated with the fort that we tell, but they're not directly connected to these buildings.
Okay.
In the sense that the alleged hauntings are not connected to these buildings.
Right.
Yeah. So the reason I brought you here is, of all the buildings here at the fort, this is probably the one with the most stories attached to it. So, I don't know if you've been recording me the whole time. So if you want, we can talk a little bit about this building. So this is number 2 blockhouse, or the center blockhouse at Fort York.
Okay.
And it, along with its sister building, number 1 blockhouse, are the 2 oldest structures here at the fort today.
Mm-hmm.
Construction for these buildings began in the late fall of 1813, so just a few months after the Americans had raided York twice and had destroyed any military buildings that had previously existed here.
Mm-hmm.
These buildings were designed to act primarily as barracks, homes for the soldiers and their families, but they were designed in such a way to act as essentially little forts in and of themselves.
Right.
So that's why the walls are incredibly thick, and you have these hatches along the walls that you can open up so the soldiers could actually fire their muskets
yes.
out.
Yeah.
Now, these buildings saw a tremendous amount of use in their history. In fact, the number 1 blockhouse was very rarely used as a barracks. It was mostly used as storage. At one point, because of erosion right on the shoreline, there was a risk of it actually falling into the lake.
Oh, wow.
Why this building has stories associated with it, I'm not 100% sure. But honestly, what happens in this building is just weird things, not easily explained. And once again, I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that it's something supernatural,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
but at the same token, it is creepy. So I'll tell you 2 stories associated with this building. One actually happened, was it last year or the year before? It was during our Halloween After Dark Walking Tours.
Okay.
So it was basically a year ago, 2 years ago, around this time, that we brought in one of the tours into the space. And our guide was regaling the group with stories associated with the fort. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the people who were here started to hear what sounded distinctly like footsteps upstairs. And to the point that it kind of stopped everything.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like somebody upstairs. and somebody went to go check it out, and of course there was nothing there. But there was enough people in the room who were like, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I heard footsteps. This is, you know, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating that it should occur during one of our lantern walks, after dark walks. And you can imagine many people found it quite interesting. But a little disconcerting all the same, and it's stuff like that, little weird things like that, that happen here the most. But I would say the story I'm going to tell you next, and this happened to me, and actually the same person who was delivering that tour. It wasn't in October, it wasn't around Halloween, it was dead of summer, but it's probably the weirdest story that I can think of that's happened here. And it was during one of the big special events that often happen in the Common, the park just to the west of us.
Mm-hmm.
Myself and my colleague were here till after midnight. We were here to basically just make sure everything was hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm.
Watching the activities out on the Common. The fort was open that day, and being the summer, it closed at 5 p.m., and another colleague of ours was the one who went around and locked the place, and armed the place, too. So he did the job he always does at the end of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
At about 8 p.m. that evening, I got bored and decided to double-check all the doors, mm-hmm. walked around, everything was fine. Well, then you come to midnight, and myself and my colleague are going to leave now. So we go over to the security room, just make sure all the alarms are set. And we open the door, and we see on the fire panel an indication of a trouble in this building. Now, at the time, our fire system was rather old. and needed to be refurbished and repaired. So I didn't think anything of it, seeing it blinking like that. So I know that something we had been doing is we had been putting it on disregard, this particular section of it on disregard, and so I basically silenced it and, again, thought nothing of it. Like, oh, it must have happened during the day that this was acting up, and then it came off silent, so I'm just going to silence it again. We left the electrical room and then started the security room and started heading in towards this direction, and we could hear the sound of the fire alarm in this building. Wah, 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 wah. Very loud, right? You didn't hear it before. We heard it as we got closer and closer. It was very loud. We got to the door, and I went for the door, and it was locked. So I opened it up. Of course, lights all turned off, so it's pitch black. But the noise is blazing. It's like, wah, wah, wah. So I turn on the light and look around. There's no smoke. There's no fire. But the pull station, that's right over there by the door. You see it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Inside the glass? That had been pulled. So
someone pulled the fire alarm.
Well, let me get to this. So pull station was pulled. Alarm was going off. I shut the door, locked it again, and went back with my colleague to the security room, to the electrical room. And I quickly called the security company to say, like, we have this issue.
Yeah.
They had no indication that there was a fire emergency at the fort. And it's like, really? And it's like, yeah, sorry, we don't have anything on our end. And it's like, oh, that's not good. Then I call the fire department because I want to know if they're sending any engines down. Now, normally we would they have a really good response time. So normally you would think we would be hearing the engines by now. But I call the fire department, not 911, but, you know, the non-emergency number, and then they explain what's happening. And they say, oh, no, we also have no indication that there's a fire emergency at Fort York. Now, once again, all this could be contributed to the very aged system that we have here. Mm-hmm. Well, I said, okay, I think you need to send somebody down because we're having a fire alarm going off. We have a pulled pull station. And one of the things about, you know, if a pull station is pulled, right, you can reset it, but then you're liable if there is anything untoward that actually occurred, right? So I wanted the professionals, the fire department, come down and investigate. So we're waiting over at the near the entrance where they would be coming, and then the firemen come. You know, so what's happening, and explain what's happening. So I explain to them that, you know, a pull station's been pulled in here, and an alarm's going off, and nobody seemed to know. And they were like, well, that's highly unusual. And I'm like, don't get me wrong. This is turning into a bad night. So we walk back here. Remember, I locked the door behind me. So I open the door again, turn back on the lights, and, you know, there's the pulled pull station. So they reset it, and the alarm turns off. So what happened? I said, well, you know, this building was locked at 5 p.m. It was still locked, no alarm, at 8 p.m. when I went around. And it was still locked, but with an alarm around midnight. And here we are, you know, like 12:15 now.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh, that's really weird. You know, these things just don't pull themselves. somebody must have been locked in here. Somebody must still be here. And by that point, my colleague had started to go up the stairs because she was going to see what was going, like, if everything was okay upstairs. And then she heard that somebody might still be in the room. She comes running back. So myself and the firemen spend the next 5 minutes or so looking at every nook and cranny. We looked up the fireplace there. We went upstairs, checked all the various crawl spaces, you know, with the idea that maybe at 5 p.m. when my colleague locked up, he didn't notice somebody in the building and locked this person in the building. And I say locked this person in the building because... So that door, the main door, we came through, you can only lock from the outside.
Okay.
You can only open from the outside. So if you're locked in here, you're locked in here. Now, we do have an emergency exit, right?
Right.
Up here on the second floor. So you can actually open this and get out. So it's not like you're locked in here. If you really want, you can get out of here. Well, the thing is, this was still locked from the inside.
Right.
So one door is locked from the outside, only from the outside. And this door is locked from the inside, only from the inside. And yet we have a pulled pull station at midnight. And alarms are blazing. So we didn't find anyone. And the fireman basically said, yeah, this is really strange. Bye. You know, like, you know, they were laughing it off. But, admittedly, it was kind of weird. And they didn't have an explanation. Now, I've heard people say, oh, you know, maybe the one thing we couldn't find was the broken glass tube that, you know, is held in place by the pole stations, the old pole stations. We couldn't find that. And my colleagues couldn't find it in the days following, the guys, you know, the guys who maintain this building, clean this building. Mm-hmm. So one idea was that maybe the glass tube hadn't been replaced the last time we had the pull station inspected, and maybe it wasn't latched properly, and then for whatever reason, the latch came down and triggered the alarm. Some people have said that maybe humidity plays a factor in it, and it was the height of summer. But I have never personally experienced anything like this before.
Yeah.
I haven't experienced anything like this since, and it just seems particularly random to have a pull station just because of humidity all of a sudden flip itself.
I don't see those things being prone to just flipping.
Well, no, you can,
it seems, yeah.
You can tell how, like, they're meant to have a little bit of resistance.
Force. Yeah,
to pull
it.
So, granted, if this little tube wasn't healed, you know, this would...
You still have to pull it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to pull it enough. There's a little, on these old pull stations, there's like a little switch, metal switch.
Mm-hmm.
So when you pull down the level heel, you flip the switch and that sets the alarm off.
So it's not really a sense of gravity. It's more something has to be pulled
yes.
in order for it to be pulled.
Okay. Well, at least that's how I understand it.
I've never pulled ones.
No.
But. Yeah. Well, and modern ones are different. Like these are fairly, the exterior of these are fairly old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, still made of metal. A lot of the newer ones are plastic, right?
Which one was pulled?
Yeah, the one down here. We can take a closer look again.
Yeah. Do you mind if I take some pictures?
Oh, no. Go right ahead.
Yeah,
so this is the pull station over here. Again, that was pulled. And right now, it doesn't have a metal tube.
How long has it not had a metal tube?
I'm not sure. Maybe I should look into this. But yeah, so currently it doesn't have a metal tube in it.
Yeah.
But you can see, like, it's not, like, it's flush.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe this is the, how it would have looked on the day that this thing happened. But, yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, if there's no metal tube there now, you'd think that the same thing would probably happen again.
Yeah.
But it's the only time that's happened, like, on the entire...
The only time I'm aware of it happening.
Wow.
Where this occurred. And then, again, you know, if the fireman said, oh, this is a fairly regular occurrence, these kind of things happen because of XYZ,
mm-hmm.
that would have been fine.
Yeah.
But because they kind of laughed it off as just, yeah, this is weird.
It's really weird. And
yeah,
they just
and
laughed.
Then just laughed.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, again, I'm not saying that this was a supernatural event.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it was a ghost. But
it's strange.
It was very strange.
Yeah.
And very disconcerting. Like, again, that fleeting moment where it was like, and the person is still in this building.
Yeah.
And we kind of got to go, oh, great.
Yeah, that made me, and I'm like, I know there's no one else here but us, but even I just kind of had a visceral reaction to, like, I don't like the idea of someone hiding in a building that's locked
mm-hmm.
up like that.
Well, and the thing is, you know, regrettably, this building has had a couple guests locked in it, not at the same time,
mm-hmm.
but over the years, I am aware of a few occasions where this occurred. And it's in part because it's a big building, and depending on the time of day, you know, the problem is that you've got to be very diligent in securing this building to make sure it's actually empty.
Mm-hmm.
With all the display cases up there, you can imagine, it's actually easy to sort of blend in, especially
yeah.
if you're not moving and just reading the texts.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so when we close this building, I'm going to do this, we turn off all the lights. And usually when this happens, people start to make a noise.
Yeah.
So in both occasions that I'm aware of people actually getting locked in here, within moments of them getting locked in here, we could hear, you know, let us out. So, you know, to think if there was somebody who was locked in here that night, they intentionally did not make a big deal of it until they pulled the station. And again, the building was locked at 5, double-checked at 8, but by midnight it was still locked, but the alarm was going off. So outside of this story with the pull station and the story of the footsteps, the other thing that happened a number of years ago was the sort of pounding on the door, on that top door. So the layout of this space was slightly different back in the late 80s. The big power switch was actually over underneath the staircase. So you actually had to turn off the lights and then kind of feel your way back towards this door.
Oh.
So a little creepy. So there was a colleague of mine. He just retired with the city. He was working here late because of an event that was being held in this space. It was a private event. And he was just cleaning up from it. And he heard rapping on the top door there. And he thought, oh, maybe one of those silly buggers are back because they forgot something. Mm-hmm. And they didn't go to the main door. So he went up to the top, opened that door, and nobody was there, of course. And he thought nothing of it, and he shut the door again. And it's like, you know, person's trying to... Ivo, I heard something on the person's trying to have
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Within a few minutes, it happened again. But this time, he's like, you know what? I'm going to go out this door, and I'm going to track this guy. I'm going to catch this guy in the act, because he's going to try to run down, because it's an exterior staircase. Yeah, let's go outside and talk.
Yeah, okay.
Microphone work outside?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah.
So here's the wrapping on the top there. And he figures, I can get out here, get back here, catch this guy before he's in. Because they have to come down this flight of stairs.
Right.
And furthermore, this occurred in the winter, and there was, as I understand it, a nice dusting of snow on the ground. So the thing is, you know, if you're going down a flight of stairs, wooden stairs, you're going to be a little careful in the dead of winter for mice and stuff.
Yeah.
So my colleague comes out, doesn't catch anyone here, and he chases around the building, almost like a Warner Brothers cartoon. Comes all the way around the building, back to where he started, and he didn't see anyone. And then he looked down and realized that the only set of footprints in the snow is his, running around the building looking for this guy.
Oh my gosh.
And so he's not finished in that building yet, so he has to go in, still finish what he's doing, and still turn off the lights at one end, and then like feel his way to the door on the other. And he would have been younger than I am now, not that that's saying much necessarily, but you know, like he's a young fella in his prime, yeah?
Is that a coyote?
That is a coyote.
All right.
We have resident coyotes here.
Yeah, that's fine. They're all over my parents' house.
So if you guys want, you can go in into the main section of the building now. I can just hop on it.
Okay. Yeah.
So you get a sense of what it would sound like.
Sure. Oh, God, this door's going to be...
Oh, that is loud.
Wow.
You heard it okay?
Yeah, that's very loud.
Yeah. So it's a thick door, but it resonates
quite
well. Yeah,
you hear it through the whole building.
So you can imagine how, you know, you either hear knocking or you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was, when he first told me this story, he was adamant that he did indeed hear knocking. And it's that is more, and the footsteps with this building are more sort of fall into the line of your traditional sort of,
mm-hmm.
ooh, ghost.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is true that this building, these buildings in general, being made of wood and mm-hmm. And being over 200 years old, they do creak and crack.
Yeah.
But we who work here get very used to these sounds. So in the officer's mess over here,
mm-hmm.
The doors, you will have guests who will go, oh, the door slammed shut. And it's just because the way the building is designed and its location within the fort
mm-hmm.
means that you can have sort of a gust of air within
okay.
the building. And
right.
any doors that are a little ajar will all of a sudden slam
yeah.
shut.
Yeah.
And we're very used to them. So we'll heal that in that building and not even jump. Whereas our guests will, what was
yeah.
that? It's like,
yeah.
So when my colleagues talk about, like, I distinctly heard footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Or I heard knocking, mm-hmm. you know, I can't automatically say that is not true.
Right.
Probably the weirdest of those, like, I heard something that I shouldn't have heard, was we have a modern kitchen facility built underneath our north wall, just behind the brick building now.
Okay.
And there's washrooms in there, too. And two of my colleagues were working late, and one of them was in the kitchen. And she could have sworn she heard her coworker come in through, there's two doors there, come in through one of the doors, head towards the washroom, and use the washroom, you know, had to urinate. Now, you know, there's privacy, but if it's quiet enough, you know, you'll start to hear that.
Yeah.
But then she never heard him come out, but didn't really think anything of it. And so she went to come back out of the kitchen herself, and she stepped outside, and there he is smoking a cigarette. And she's like, wait a minute, aren't you in the washroom? And he's like, yeah. No, I've been out here the whole time having a cigarette.
Oh.
So they're both like, well, somebody's in the washroom. So they waited out there for a few minutes to watch whoever it was come back out. Mm-hmm. Nobody came back out, so they built up enough courage to go in and go towards the washrooms, and they're all empty.
Wow.
And the whole bunker is empty. So, you know, again, you know, could it have been sounds we're not used to? Maybe. But many of us, majority of the staff who've worked here have worked here for many years at all hours of the day.
Yeah.
We're kind of used to the creaks and cracks of the buildings. So, you know, when you hear someone use the toilet, you know someone's using the toilet.
Yeah.
And this is taking into account that we do have machinery in the kitchen. Like we have a big ice machine.
Right.
That will, you know, make sort of a dribbling sound.
Yeah.
But there's the toilet and then there's the ice machine.
Yeah.
So, but then the other things are much like my story of the pull station. So this building over here.
Yeah.
This is the Brick Magazine. And it was built in 1814. And it was designed to act as a storehouse for the munitions, the explosives here at the fort. Mm. It was poorly built, however. And so it, a few years later, was basically retrofitted into a storage space. Now, this building has lights on the top floor that are often left on all night.
Okay.
It's fairly common that the lights on the top floor are left on. And you're walking along Bathurst, you can see the lights in this building. And you come in through the West Gate where we came in today and you see the lights on.
Right.
So it's a fairly common occurrence. The problem is in the middle of the night when the lights go off. So I've worked here during evening shifts, security shifts, overnight shifts. And as part of those shifts, you know, we're working, we're securing the perimeter, we're making sure the site is sound.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get used to seeing the lights in this building on. But then every so often, and this hasn't happened recently, mind, but every so often I'd walk by and the lights were off. And I hadn't gone in this building. And there's nobody else working who could have gone in the building to turn out the lights. So it's a weird thing like that. And it has nothing to do with the breakup. You know, it's just a really odd event. And it's something about the lights in this building. Because they're so often left on, you get so used to seeing them. The second you don't, you're like, that's strange.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed what building is this?
This is the 1814 magazine, or Brick Magazine, as we refer to it.
Okay.
It was designed as a munition storehouse, but it was converted into a storeroom a few years later because basically the building was built very poorly.
It's set really low. Has it sunk?
No. These types of buildings, these magazines, they were built into the ground to help, quite frankly, protect the munitions.
Gotcha.
By building their buildings in the ground, they become less of a target for the enemy outside the walls of the fort.
That makes sense.
And then also, you know, if an explosion was to occur as well, the explosion is basically funneled upwards instead of outwards. It'd still be devastating.
Yeah.
But the force of the blast would be directed straight up.
Mm.
So today, inside this building, this is what's left of a temporary exhibit that was put together for 2013 to commemorate the Battle of York.
Right.
The battle during the War of 1812, which the climax of the battle occurred on these grounds. And this building is popular with some of the guests because we have really creepy mannequins here.
Yeah.
People don't like coming in here at certain times of day because it can be really quiet and then you've got these mannequins staring at you.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I'll talk about, I'll bring us over to the officers' mess.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about, again, one of these kind of strange things that occur, and maybe it has a perfectly reasonable explanation, and I'm just lacking it. But they are still a little disconcerting. So,
have you heard a lot of like visitor stories of having encounters like that, or
we get our share of visitor stories every so often. Mm-hmm. Stories about, you know, something or someone grabbed my leg, or you know, I felt a presence in the space.
Right.
But honestly, we tend to generally sort of dismiss stories we hear from guests, in part because depending on the guest, it seems to be an expectation to have an experience
right.
at a historical site like this. And the stories that they tell don't quite... They don't connect with what we know about the history of the site.
Right. Yeah.
So it's one of these things where, you know, they'll talk about, ooh, I got the feeling that a murder happened in the space. And it's like, well, no.
And we've talked about this with other locations too, where just the weight of the history behind the buildings can help to build the atmosphere for people too.
Yeah.
And it kind of feeds into the stories.
And that's a big, you know, there's a whole grouping of guests, of people who go to sites just for that.
Yeah.
To get sort of inundated by the ambiance, by the feel.
Yeah.
It is a living history space in that the interior of this building is set up to reflect what it would have looked like in the mid-1830s. And again, all the doors in this space are designed to be closed from the inside,
mm-hmm.
except for this door here. This is the last door. So mm-hmm. when you're doing security, you kind of get into a routine.
Right.
You start at one door, you lock all the doors on the inside, and you come to this door. And this door is the only one you can lock from the outside.
Right. Okay.
A few years ago, we were having an issue where this door wasn't being locked, or at least that's what it was believed, to the point that even an email memo went out to all the staff to remind the staff to lock this door properly.
Right.
Well, the thing is, it was happening enough, and it was happening to staff who are particularly diligent about making sure this is locked,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people were wondering, well, what's up with this? This is getting really weird.
Yeah.
And one night in particular was sort of the last straw. I was here doing an overnight security shift. I was doing sort of an evening into overnight security shift.
Mm-hmm.
And this door in this building was locked again at 5 p.m. Or 4 or 5 p.m. I know for sure it was. And then during my shift, I double-checked all the doors again, and this door was locked. And then the next morning, the groundskeeper arrives. He arrives really early.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I chatted for a moment or two, and we talked actually about what's been happening with this building. And then a few moments later, he comes back, and he says, you wouldn't guess, the door's open again. And I'm like, no, that's you know, balderdash.
Yeah.
And the thing was, he, you know, maybe he was playing a trick on me. No, he was, well, at least he came across as absolutely sincere. Like, yeah, maybe he played a trick on me, but he was coming across as absolutely sincere
mm-hmm.
that the door was indeed open after a night of being locked. And again, locked for five, double-checked by me, and then woe betide the next morning it's open. Now, what we discovered, we brought in a locksmith to take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem went away after we brought in the locksmith. So, all right. So one of the things we found was that the bolt here was very weak. So you could push the bolt in with your thumb. Like right now I can't, right?
Yeah, right.
The only way to close the bolt is with the key. But before we got the locksmith in, you could basically push it close with your finger, and it didn't take a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So it was faulty. It shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
All right, easy peasy. The issue that we had, though, was you can see where the bolt goes into.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What's pushing it back open?
Right.
So it may be a weak bolt. It may easily just push in and thus open. But what's causing it to do that when it's engaged?
Right, because it's in that little...
Yeah.
Like, no one can get in there
to
do that.
So this was another example of like, okay, yes, there was actually something wrong with the lock. We know that. Still doesn't make us feel any better.
Yeah.
Because what happened was very strange.
Yeah. It's not going to do that on its own.
It shouldn't be doing that on its own.
Yeah.
And this was happening, again, multiple evenings. Not every single day, but it was happening enough during that time that it brought an email out from management saying, please secure our buildings.
Yeah.
And again, it was this this last straw, if you will, where, again, we know it was locked. We know for certain it was locked, only to have it open the next morning. So very strange indeed.
Wow.
Matthew.
Yes. Go.
This building is probably the most popular building at the fort for guests who want to taken an experience, because there's very few artificial lights in the building,
yeah.
And because it's set up to reflect what it would have looked like, you have a lot of guests who kind of gravitate towards it.
Right.
But outside of this story with the lock, it's the only story associated, yeah. And it's the blockhouse, the first building I took you in, that probably has the most, and even stories from the public too.
Right.
Stories of people getting wheeled out, they're like kind of feeling the heebie-jeebies and then wanting to get out of there, or
yeah.
People claiming to have felt someone grab their ankle, grab their lower leg. So I don't know what it is about that building, but the center blockhouse does seem to attract the most stories to it. I need to get back to my desk.
Sure, okay, absolutely.
If you have any sort of follow-ups, you're welcome to catch me before you leave.
Okay.
And I'm happy to chat a little further, but I need to get back.
Of course.
Had to take Friday and yesterday off, so I'm playing a lot of catch-up
sure,
right now.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
And so, again, you'll be able to look around. We do have a group on site, so there will be a school group visiting, so you may not be able to get easy access to some of the spaces.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, perfect.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this is great. Yeah,
this is great. Thank
so
you.
So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Have a good day.
Okay, so I want to say this is the first place out of all the places we've been to that I haven't felt very much. And I'm not saying that it's not haunted, because there's plenty of stories saying that it is. Mm-hmm. But I'd say overall I didn't feel that kind of energy there, except for the one building where Ewan talked about the fire alarm. Mm-hmm. I felt uncomfortable there, and I felt like I had, chest pain
feel,
the one side.
Did you feel uncomfortable there before or after he told the story of the fire alarm?
I felt uncomfortable when I walked in.
Okay.
Yeah. I felt uncomfortable, as soon as I walked in. All the other buildings, nothing. I didn't feel anything.
I felt fine in the entire thing.
Yeah.
It was open, it was airy and breezy, mm-hmm. and I didn't even feel the weight of history.
But anyway, yeah, I'd say the first building, I felt a little bit, uncomfortable, and then he told a couple stories in there, so I'm like, okay, so there is some merit to what I was feeling. But the other buildings, one that we had to go down into the ground
that
a little bit
amazing.
And then go up, I didn't feel anything in there.
I liked that building though, because it was so deep.
The one where the staff had problems with the door lock in that one building, unlock. I felt fine in there too. So I don't really know, but...
Did you notice when we were in there, that particular section, we were in the actual museum part that's blocked off from people?
Yeah.
That people can't actually get in there?
Yeah.
I've never been in that part of a museum. Yeah. I was standing there like, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I should be on the other side of the barrier.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure there are parts of it that are haunted in some way,
mm-hmm.
but it felt quiet, very low energy in general.
There wasn't very many people there. It was the middle of a work day, so.
Yeah, but even just the site itself, it was very, it just kind of was.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed my time there, because I like learning about the history, and I enjoyed chatting with Ewan and walking through, but as far as... for the purposes of this podcast.
Yeah, the paranormal aspect.
Yeah, I've definitely coughed, Black Creek cough, been in situations where I felt a lot more.
Yeah.
I kind of felt, because it was the same with the McKenzie House. I didn't really feel anything there either, but mm-hmm. I felt the weight of the history more.
Yeah.
When we were there. I don't know if it's because Fort York is so...
It's so massive.
Open concept.
Yeah. It is really open concept. It's a ginormous field.
My favorite part was the coyote that just kind of randomly
popped
up.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it was, I don't know. I believe the stories, of course, but I didn't feel anything there. And we probably talked about this on site with you in a little bit, and I know I've definitely said this on the podcast before, but I do believe that the weight of the history can account for a large majority of the ghost stories and feelings mm-hmm. that people have at these places.
Yeah.
I think it's echoes of the past and the feeling of being in these areas where so much tragedy and so much death has occurred
mm-hmm.
kind of manifests as people believing that they feel or see certain things.
Yeah.
Not saying that it's not true, but I think that could account for a large majority of them.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that's kind of what's going on with Fort York a little
especially
bit.
For first-time visitors. I believe the staff stories more, if they've been there constantly, you know?
Yeah, first-time visitors will go in expecting, especially if you've
like what he said
stories.
Before, saying, someone grabbed my ankle. I'm like, come on.
No.
Like,
that doesn't even
what
happen
soldiers can
Creek.
Be grabbing your ankle? Like,
And I mean, there was a lot of death and destruction there.
Yeah.
We opened the podcast with the wonderful Yankee Doodle song and my little anecdote about the British doing that to mock them. In the War of 1812, one of the, like, the Battle of York was incredibly bloody. And I want to read, I just see my, this book is amazing.
Yeah. She is holding up the Toronto Book of the Dead.
By Adam Bunch.
Yes.
Wonderful. Please read it. Please, please. Actually, no, don't read it because then you'll just see where I'm getting everything for the podcast. When the Americans were on the verge of victory, and they did win this battle, the British general inside the York knew that it was lost and was like, hey, guys, take a hike to Kingston.
Yeah.
And I did the math because I just saw the question in your eyes. I did the math. It's 263 kilometers. It's 2 days of straight walking if you didn't rest or stop to eat. If you literally just set out and didn't stop, it's 2 days straight from Fort York to Old Fort Henry.
Okay.
So, like, probably 3 to 4 days with stops if there's horses involved. So, anyway, yeah, he's like, take a hike there. Like, escape. You'll be safe there.
Okay.
On your way out... A, set fire to this massive warship that we were building so that the Americans can't use it.
Oh, right, okay.
Because then they would, like, monopolize the Great Lakes. That would not be good.
Mm-hmm.
B, I lost my place.
It's okay.
B, this. He was also determined to keep the fort's supply of weapons and ammunition out of enemy hands. Most of it was kept in the Grand Magazine, a storehouse built into the embankment of the shoreline at the southern edge of the fort. As his troops retreated, the general gave a fateful order, destroy the magazine. It was one of the biggest explosions anyone in North America had ever seen. The magazine stored 30,000 pounds of gunpowder, 10,000 cannonballs, and 30,000 musket rounds.
Oh
the blast could be heard for miles, far across the lake in Niagara. Buildings shook and windows rattled. The shockwave swept the American soldiers up off their feet and hurled them 20 meters through the air. Lungs hemorrhaged, intestines burst. A great cloud of debris rose above the fort. Tons of stone and wood and metal were launched high into the sky and far across the field. The wreckage fell back to the earth in a deadly rain, tearing through flesh and crushing bone. The look on Kenzie's face right now, and I'm going to read you one more thing.
Okay.
This is a quote from an American soldier who was writing about it. It was more horrible, more awful, and at the same time more sublime than my pen can portray. At first, the air was darkened with stones, rafters, and clay. In about a half a minute, the infernal shower descended and dealt destruction to our column. The ground at the head of it was covered with the dead and dying. So this is Fort York in ruins.
Wow.
Like, many British soldiers were also killed in this course, obviously, but the Americans took a huge... So that's, like, when you think of events like that happening, not necessarily... on the property that we were currently at, but, like, in the area.
Yeah.
These stories manifesting doesn't really come as that much of a surprise.
Right, for sure. Yeah, because of how much destruction that happened. People want to believe and want to think that there's going to be more.
And I'm sure there is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very violent way to die. If
yeah, for sure.
If going to stay behind for any reason, it's going to be something within that.
But we did hear from, I'll insert this now, but we heard from Danielle a little bit about her experience because she used to work there.
I also just want to say that that particular, what I just read was from page 90 to 91 of the Toronto Book of the Dead. So it's in the chapter, The Battle of York, if anybody wanted to go read about that.
Was it a different atmosphere at Fort York, did you find, or...?
Well, if you've ever been over there, it's the 1830s barracks is where I find it. About 200 Americans died because they blew up their gunpowder magazine deliberately to kill them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just you get a lot more... and part of that is its location, but, you know, you get more doors slamming randomly and stuff like that. So I never mind being here on my own, and I sometimes have been at night. but I don't like being at Fort York at night. It's and not just because of ghosts, but it's kind of dark and can't see in front of you, even with all the condos around.
Yeah.
But and they do a bit of ghost stuff over there. But yeah,
yeah, that's one of our next episodes. We're going there.
Yeah. Well, if they're letting you do the same thing you're doing here, a cool spot to go is down to the secret bunker underneath the 1830s barracks, because that's where I always find it rather atmospheric.
So we're back from Danielle's story, and I think I just wanted to share a little bit of the ghost stories that I have read on torontoghost.org. You guys should really check out this website, because they pretty much have ghost stories for every place we've been to.
torontoghost.org?
Yeah.
Yeah, we basically use them in every episode.
Yeah. So this one is from a member of a Girl Guide troop from around 1996. She's older now, obviously. But she submitted this. Basically, they were staying over in the barracks just near the north entrance. And basically, they had this buddy system set up where if one had to go to the bathroom, they had to bring someone else with them. So the girls would go to the bathroom. So she brought, or no, her friend had to go to the bathroom. So her friend brought her with her. And they went out. And see, the bathroom is in the building next door. So they had to go to another building. So the girl goes into the building and her friend waits outside, and she sees, like, right in the middle of the field, a soldier standing with the full red uniform, a musket in hand, and just
a British soldier.
Yeah. Not looking at her, but staring out towards the lake and just, like, standing there. And she's, like, just staring. She's, like, I don't know, like, what's going on kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was freaked out. So she went into the bathroom with her. And they came out, and the soldier was gone. And the thing is that there was a lot of mist on the field, and so it didn't. There was no disturbing of mist or anything like that. But when they walked through the field, there was. They were disturbing the mist, so she thought it's weird that there was no trail left behind of to someone was moving through the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then she thought there's a possibility that it could have been a reenactor or something like that. Like they're thinking like logically, but then she's like, I can't reason why someone would be in full dress in the middle of the night and why they would stand in the middle of the field waiting to scare a couple of little girls. On a more recent visit, I casually asked the staff about security there at night, and they replied if anyone was there at all, they would be in plain street clothes.
Ooh.
So that's one of them. So this is from torontoghost.org. So a woman submitted her story and said, my husband and I have been running our dog at Old Fort York for years. In 1998, my husband was standing there alone, and my dog had run off chasing squirrels when he noticed a man wearing dark greenish clothes standing watching him from 50 meters away. The man was leaning against a tree, just watching him. While this unnerved my husband, he looked over to our car to make sure there was make sure that no one was breaking into it. There was no one at the car, and when he looked back at the fellow who was staring, there was no one there. This really irritated my husband because he thought that something odd was going on. He walked briskly to the tree and realized before long that there was no footprints in the snow where the man should have left some. He looked up into the tree all around, but nothing. Needless to say, he came home immediately. It's not like my husband to make up a story like this to scare me. It hasn't happened since, but it certainly changed our skeptical minds about ghosts. So there's that one. Seemed like a lot of lone soldiers standing and watching.
Well, I mean, they were kind of just left.
Yeah. So, here's another one. After the Turf Festival at Garrison Common, Fort York, this past weekend, so that was Sunday, July 7th, 2013, a group of four or five people that were working all heard a harsh voice say, one more song.
Yankee Doodle!
They checked the monitors and speakers to make sure someone wasn't fooling around, but everything was unplugged as they were tearing down the festival. Shortly afterwards, my husband, who was also working the festival, was walking across the Garrison Commons field after all the guests had left, and he heard a voice go by him as if someone ran past him whispering, "Never again." It frightened him so badly, he decided to never work there again. All the people, all grown men, who had heard these voices were visibly shaken, and one commented that he just wanted to get out of there after a shift because he was creeped out by it. It's obvious to me that this is the work of fallen soldiers. I had no idea until I researched a bit after that there is a burial ground at Fort York, from what I've read. How heartbreaking to think of a loud music festival tearing up the grounds that these men fought and died on.
People have had a lot of experiences there. I don't know what it was. I just didn't connect to it.
I mean, we were there for what, like an hour?
Yeah, I may have also approached it with more of a clinical curiosity than I do usually, because I'm pretty interested. Like, I really like being at Old Fort Henry, and I like the stories, I like the history.
Mm-hmm.
That might have played into my approach to it, but you're usually more sensitive than I am anyway, and you didn't feel anything there.
No, besides that one building, that was it. And that's it for my ghost stories. There's tons, absolutely tons. I will link this into our bio so you guys can read some of the stories. And then obviously we have all the stories from Ewan. That his personal stories and other stories.
His personal story about the fire alarm is great. I love that, because even if there is a logical explanation for it, it's still such a bizarre occurrence that it's like...
Yeah, like, it's even like, if doesn't it, make any
even
sense.
Even if it's not supernatural, how the hell could that have even happened? That doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, because when you try to make sense of that story, it's like you can't even think of what possibly it could have been. So then you just got like ghosts.
it was a ghost or gravity.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
But then gravity. We talked about gravity when someone actually had to pull it down. So anyway, guys, we have come to the end of the podcast. This is very surprising. Like,
so for our next episode,
Adara's really excited about this one.
I'm living my dream. We are finally going to do.
Gibraltar? I don't know how to pronounce it.
I'm gonna just real quick look up the pronunciation if I can.
Gibraltar.
I'm gonna put that
Gibraltar.
In there.
Gibraltar.
Okay, now point say it how lighthouse. You said it.
Gibraltar. I choked. This is a very British man.
The following pronunciation.
Gibraltar.
Gibraltar.
No, but he's British, so it sounds like an er, but it's Gibraltar.
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 Gibraltar?
Gibraltar.
Isn't there an R at the end?
Yeah, you don't always pronounce...
Okay, Gibraltar.
I don't
know, when I first saw it, I was like, Gibraltar?
Gibraltar. Yeah, no, Gibraltar. I just have to get used to saying it. Gibraltar.
Gibraltar.
The lighthouse,
Gibraltar lighthouse.
I swear to God, guys, by the time we get to this lighthouse, we will know how to pronounce the name.
Yeah, Adara has been waiting to do this since the beginning.
Before we even started the podcast, I remember we were sitting in Innes College, up where I usually sit.
Yeah,
and we were doing research into potential like. What kind of ghost stories would be covered if we happened to actually start a podcast on this?
Yeah.
And the first thing I found was one about a haunted lighthouse, and I'm like, we're doing it.
Now,
this is happening.
Explain why you like lighthouses.
Because they're by water.
And Adara loves water.
And boats.
Yeah.
There's like, the audio from Fort York is about, it's an hour and 16 minutes. And I think a good 45 minutes of that is just me in the microphone going, oh my god, look
you should have seen it. Actually, maybe I'll post this on Instagram, but you should have seen the text between me and Adara before we even met up.
I had the best commute in. I took the Harborfront. It was the Harborfront. Was it a street? Yes, it was a streetcar.
Yeah.
So the Harborfront streetcar. And I got to see all the beautiful ships.
She was freaking out. I'm gonna put this on Instagram, but she was freaking out.
I was having the best time. And then when we got to Fort York, there were so many ships, and there's so much about boats because they had a naval fleet. Oh, and it was a great time. And swords. There were a lot of swords as well.
Anyway, guys, so the next episode,
finally getting to the lighthouse,
is going to be the lighthouse.
It's going to be a full hour of me screaming about oceans and lighthouses and ships.
Yes. We had planned
and
to maybe. We had planned to maybe do this in the summer, so now we're doing it in November. And if you guys don't know, the lighthouse is on Toronto Island, which is a ferry away.
It's gonna be gorgeous.
Yeah, so we're gonna take the ferry. It's gonna be great. We're so dedicated to you guys. So we're
going to
do this.
Kenzie, are what? You saying that we're going to have audio of me
yes.
on a bus?
Yes. Yes. You should see the excitement in her face. Her voice has gone up 10 octaves, and she's just waving her hands around. So be excited for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We may not find the lighthouse keeper.
We're gonna
wait and
see.
But we'll see it. We'll see. It'll be a great episode. You guys should be happy with it. Anyway, she's excited. I'm excited.
Guys, boats and aliens. That's all I need.
Yeah.
Oh, I almost made it a full episode, didn't I?
What?
Without mentioning aliens.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. I listened to the first episode of Men in Black, and I was like, what the
fuck
is this?
Insane. Isn't it in fucking insane?
There's like this one story, and he's like, oh, yeah, he had like really thin lips, but then when he like put his hand against it, it was actually not lips. It was just drawn on lips, and it was just a hole. And I was like, what? Excuse me? Anyway. Just so you know, if you guys are interested in our podcast, you'd probably love Last Podcast on the Left.
They're already listening.
I know.
They're already listening.
Yeah, I'm sure they're already listening, but you guys should definitely check them out, because, I mean, yeah, it's really great.
Oh my god. Pause.
What?
We totally forgot to mention this.
What?
And I think we should mention this on the podcast,
yeah.
because people are listening.
Yeah.
We surpassed 1,000 downloads.
Oh, yeah, right. I posted that on our social media.
It's our first major milestone as a podcast,
yeah.
and it's so exciting.
Yeah, we're so excited. I mean, we started this back in May, and it was like a summer project, and now
yeah.
we're so dedicated because we absolutely love the content.
So much
we
fun.
Love the listeners. We love, like, doing this together, so we're just like, we're going to keep going.
And we love
just
hearing from
going.
You guys, too,
yes.
so keep sending us stuff.
Keep send us emails, send it on our social media. Like, we want to hear your stories. We want to hear your comments on our episode.
Yeah.
We want to hear your suggestions.
And we know you guys are out there because there's been 1,000 downloads, so
yeah.
you can't hide from
yeah.
us.
You can't hide from us anymore. That's what you all have to. Okay, so that is it for today, and I love you, and bye.
Kenzie got real intense real fast. We really need to sign off.
Yeah, we do need to sign up. We will come up with our own.
Eventually.
Yeah. And you'll notice it, and it'll be great. And hopefully we won't sound awkward, but it's good. But anyway.
It'll come organically eventually.
Yeah, it'll come organically. And I will see you later. No, I won't. I need to stop saying that.
Kenzie's having a mental breakdown.
Anyway, love you, bye.
You have said I love you so many times. Like, you finished recording now.
Dead Men Don't Podcast is hosted by us, Adara and Kenzie. Original music has been provided by Ethan Reed. Find us on social media at Dead Men Don't Pod on Twitter, at Dead Men Don't Podcast on Instagram, Dead Men Don't Podcast on Facebook, and email us at deadmendontpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow our composer, Ethan, on Instagram at Ethan A. Reed. Find all of these links and more in the description. Thanks for listening.
Away like fun and play on cornstalk fiddles, and some men ribbons red as blood all bound around their middles. Keep it up, boogie-doodle dandy, mind the music and the step, and with the girls be handy.
And there was Captain Washington upon a slapping stallion, giving orders to his men.
I guess there was a million.
Yankee-doodle, keep it up, Yankee.
I don't listen to this podcast.